From Carlisle to Punxsutawney, Milroy to York, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, lawmakers must have a new state budget in place by the end of the month. Will a revenue surplus result in profligate spending? State Representative Frank Ryan is here to discuss. Pennsylvania is the nation's second largest producer of natural gas after Texas, and we are poised to help the world deal with the loss of natural gas from Russia. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have details on this week's Allegheny Institute report. And the inflation rate hit 8.6% last month. On her Lincoln Radio Journal commentary, Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity says the erosion in buying power is affecting the lives of all Americans. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Representative Frank Ryan in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Three Republican state House members have begun impeachment proceedings against Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner. Krasner is one of a number of so-called rogue DAs across the nation who are refusing to prosecute many crimes. Philadelphia's crime rate has spiked under Krasner. State Representative Josh Kale of Beaver and Washington counties told the Center Square the lawmakers decided to pursue impeachment, quote, because the unchecked violent crime in Philadelphia has reached a breaking point due to the willful refusal of District Attorney Krasner to enforce the existing laws, end quote. The impeachment move comes just weeks after a shooting on South Street left a number of people dead and wounded. 220 people have been murdered in Philadelphia so far this year. Governor Tom Wolf's carbon tax on Pennsylvania energy generation will, quote, irreparably damage Pennsylvania's manufacturing, industrial, and commercial base, according to a legal brief filed by the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and four other industry groups challenging the validity of the so-called Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGI, which would place a de facto carbon tax on energy producers and drive coal-fired power plants in Pennsylvania out of business. That will spike electric costs by over 30%. The tax is being implemented by regulation, and if allowed to stand, would be the first such tax imposed without legislative approval. In fact, a majority of both houses of the legislature voted to cancel REGI, but the measure was vetoed by Governor Wolf. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Federal funds supposedly sent to combat the COVID-19 pandemic have swelled state coffers, as has revenue that is substantially above projections. There is no end to ideas, of course, for spending all that money. But what impact will higher spending today have in future years when that funding is not available? Here with a peek at budget deliberations is State Representative Frank Ryan. He represents the 101st Legislative District in Lebanon County. Frank, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Frank, where are we in the budget process? Of course, the deadline is the end of this month. How far have we progressed? How close are we to getting to a budget resolution?
We've had kind of an interesting issue coming forward. So we're kind of in the mid to late stages of the budget, Loman. The appropriations departments, both the House and the Senate, are working with the executive branch to see if they can come up with it. But there are really some sticking points that really have to be resolved. So I'm not sure we're that close yet. In fact, I'm fairly sure we're not that close yet, because the governor's approach from his budget forecast that he gave us in February versus what the vast majority of the Republican caucus feels, which is to hold the line to as close as possible to put more money into the rainy day fund, whereas the governor's approach is to spend to all hearts content, spend a lot of the rainy day fund and the budget surplus, which I contend there is no budget surplus, but that's another matter. So our spending desires are way off. There is a conservative group of representatives that don't believe that we should be spending that at all, since a significant portion of it was received from the federal government with the stimulus payments. And so I'm not completely convinced that is people who want to get home by the end of June might strike a deal with some of the more liberal members of the Democratic caucus to spend more than might be prudent in the long run. So only time will tell, and we'll know that in the next couple of weeks.
I'd like to follow up on that a bit, Frank. We saw during the Rendell administration, when Democrat Governor Ed Rendell was in power, there was frequently a portion of the Republican membership of the legislature who would coalesce with Democrats to pass big spending budgets. And we recently saw both the appropriations chair in the House and Senate defeated in the primary for reelection because they haven't been conservative enough. Is what you're saying the possibility that we might see history repeat itself, where you have the majority of the Republican caucuses in both House and Senate trying to hold the line, but you get a minority who coalesce with Democrats and we get another big spending budget?
I think it's a little bit different than that, just a tad bit. Senator Brown and I've talked to Representative Saylor, both appreciate the significance of where we are in the process. However, some other rank-and-file members who might make up a little bit of a larger segment of each of the two caucuses might not necessarily feel the same way. So the governor's approach at this point and the Democrats almost universally's approach is we have a lot of revenue. And for those people that are not familiar, we have about $5 billion plus in additional revenue coming in beyond original estimates. And as a result, the perception is we're sitting on a lot of cash, so let's spend it. And we have about $2.5 billion in the rainy day fund. The Republican caucus in the House, at least, would like to put an additional $2.5 billion at a minimum into the rainy day fund. I'd actually like to put more than that. Or if we didn't put it in the rainy day fund, I'd like to start paying down some of our outstanding obligations, such as making additional payments to pay down the unfunded pension liability, which would give us benefit of reducing some of the property tax burden that the other citizens have in the Commonwealth. The concern that I have is if we even go along with just putting $2.5 billion in the rainy day fund, that's still a fairly significant expansion of state spending. And my experience since I've been in Harrisburg, and it started with the Rendell years, and that's why your analogy is such a good one, that becomes the base for the next year. So what my concern is the Independent Fiscal Office has already indicated in their projections that they gave relative to the revenue estimates. They've already indicated that budget years going out 2, 3, and 4 are going to be problematic for the Commonwealth. So if we don't curb spending now, we will be establishing a base that will mean that the structural deficit will be even greater. And if you remember when I got ran for office, I said we had 2 to 4 years to turn the financial ship around. And if we didn't, we'll become insolvent in 12 years. This budget year will determine whether or not we could stay out of insolvency. And I'm not optimistic at this point.
Back in the administration of former Governor Tom Corbett, there was a federal stimulus program, if you will, funds that were available that were put into education, which everybody knew were a one-time infusion of money. And then, of course, that went away. And subsequently, Governor Corbett got accused of having cut the education budget, which he didn't do. State funding actually increased, but the federal funding went away. Frank, as we look at this year, with this large amount, significant amount of federal money sitting here as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, is there any discussion about not putting that money into ongoing programs, spending it when it has to be spent on one-time uses so we don't set up that sort of a fiscal cliff for the next governor?
There is to an extent, but not as much as I would like it to be. And I want to put some numbers in perspective for people to be aware of. The direct payments, and this came out of the Independent Fiscal Office report, the direct payments to individuals and businesses in 2020 from the federal government for federal and state pandemic relief was $64.2 billion in 2020. And in 2021, it was an additional $55 billion. To this direct state support, that is money that directly came into the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, is a total of $26.2 billion and an additional $10.9 billion that went to the local support, which includes school districts and local municipalities. That's a grand total of about $37 billion that went to state and local and school districts. And we're seeing that some of them, despite our greatest admonition, some did put it into recurring programs. So that, to me, as happened with Governor Corbett, will be the genesis for why I made the comment I'm not necessarily optimistic about the years ahead, because I think a lot more municipalities did that than possible. The budget last year, we kind of held the line a little bit, but not as much as we could have. And so we built in more spending into the budget. We went from about $39 billion up to $42 billion. And I'm concerned the governor's budget request this year is $49 billion. We won't go anywhere near that. But even if we come in at $45 billion, that becomes a basic building block then from which we go from that point on. And all that does, Loman, is increase the structural deficit going forward, which is what causes me to say, if we don't hold the line this year, we're going to have problems. And the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is likely to become insolvent in the next 6 to 7 years.
The holy grail for fiscal conservatives is the Taxpayer Protection Act, which is that we hold spending to the rate of population growth and inflation growth. Of course, inflation is running at 8.6% this month, but our population is not growing. Looking at the budget proposals that are on the table for this month, do any of them even come close to holding to that line?
The governor's budget request is for a 15% approximate increase in the budget. I personally think the Taxpayer Protection Act is, and I'm a co-sponsor, is a maximum allowable spending, not a goal. And so even at an 8.6% increase, you're looking almost at $5 billion increase in spending, which then becomes the base going forward. So what I would suggest is that becomes the upper limit, not the objective that we're trying to hit. And I say that because school districts have their annual limits that they can increase, and we found that a lot of school districts use that as the goal. I'm now allowed to raise property taxes by 2.2%, and we came under the goal 2.1%. Well, my goal is not to come under 8.6%. My goal is to make government more efficient, to be a much better custodian. I still, as I'm leaving the legislature in November, I'm still telling people that one of the things that we need to do is install and implement lien systems in the Commonwealth, which is where businesses and individuals have had to be for the past couple of decades now. That's where we get rid of waste in the system. I'm very thankful that my bill on the dynamic scoring has been signed and put into law so we can get a much better perspective about where some of these decisions are. But we need to do the Auditor General fraud and forensic capability so that we have the ability to isolate and identify those problems that happen in state government, to make sure our spending is done effectively and hold people accountable when it's not. And then the Taxpayer Protection Act is absolutely critical. As I said, I am a co-sponsor, and we need to do that. I am very concerned that, for those that don't know, before I became a legislator, I'm a CPA, and I specialize in keeping organizations out of bankruptcy. The worst thing that you can do to an organization that's in financial trouble is give it cash. And you can see that with all the pandemic between state, federal, and individual stimulus money that came in for Pennsylvania, it was $167 billion in 2 years came into these two programs. And so when you look at that, that is one of the reasons our collections are so high. And it's why the Independent Fiscal Office is so clear to say you're benefiting in the Commonwealth now from this massive amount of stimulus dollars that came into the Commonwealth that we will not have going forward. You can see what's been going on in the stock market in the past couple of weeks. That's going to translate into $5 to $10 billion in market losses in the two pension funds. So if I were a privately held company and had to deal with it, I'd have to deal with that billions of dollars of losses. State government can amortize that over 30 years. So we have real serious problems. We need to spend well below the Taxpayer Protection Act limits. We need to implement the Taxpayer Protection Act. We need to get serious about these fiscal issues, because if we don't stand a snowball's chance of surviving this economic downturn when it occurs. And that will be the litmus test, is when the economic downturn occurs, as to whether or not Pennsylvania is ready for it or not ready for it. And I'm bound and determined to make sure that we're ready for it.
And regrettably, it looks like that downturn may be on the horizon. We have been talking with State Representative Frank Ryan. He represents the 101st State Legislative District, that in Lebanon County. Frank, if we have listeners who would like to read more about what you are doing in the legislature, where can they go on the web to find you?
Website is a really good, robust legislative page. It's called RepFrankRyan.com, and that'll take you right to our legislative page. And please sign up for email updates. And I'm in office through the end of November, and I'm on the pension board until probably early January. So I'm happy to answer any questions anybody might have.
State Representative Frank Ryan. Frank, thank you for being with us.
Loman, thank you so much.
Pennsylvania is a leader in natural gas production, and the industry can expand further to fill the world's energy needs. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi explain on this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. We want to talk about your most recent policy brief, which deals with natural gas production. And you kind of opened the piece with something that might a lot of people might not know, that Pennsylvania currently is the second largest producer of natural gas in the country behind Texas.
That is correct. Based on our geographical luck, if you will, we're sitting on two of the largest shale deposits in the country, if not the world, in the Marcellus and Utica Shale. As a result, Pennsylvania is now responsible, as of 2021, for 21.1% of all U.S. natural gas production. Texas is just ahead of us at 23.9%. So the thought of the natural gas in this day and age of energy awareness, and everybody's aware of the gas prices that go into our gas tanks and home heating and whatnot, I thought maybe it'd be time to take a look at just how productive is Pennsylvania? How many wells do we have? And what could this possibly mean? You know, we're always, especially in this side of the state, we're looking for that next big thing, right? You know, our steel industry left us and we don't have that backup. You know, Eds and Meds is kind of sort of carrying us, but technology really hasn't taken off. But the natural gas industry kind of did take off early part of this century, you know, 2005-ish. So I wanted to look at the number of gas wells in Pennsylvania from 2005 to 2021. So trying to catch the beginning of what we call unconventional gas well boom.
Just to distinguish there, because your brief does talk about conventional and unconventional wells. Can you give our listeners an idea of what the difference is?
Absolutely. When we talk a conventional gas well, it's a vertical well that's drilled maybe a couple hundred feet, and then that's about it. It hits a pool of gas and extracts it. An unconventional well is something more of a horizontal well, in that it can go down and then go across. And then once it hits into the shale formation, of course, shale is rock, and the gas is trapped in pockets in this rock, they use hydraulic fracturing, a mix of chemicals and water to get in there and bust the rock up and free the gas from those pockets and brings it out. And so they tend to call those unconventional gas wells. And so that is a controversial method of drilling. Obviously, there's a lot of folks out there that do not like fracking. But, you know, here we are in 2022, and it seems that any environmental real repercussions from fracking seems to be minimized as the industry has just gotten better. And so when we look at gas, there are 33 of the Pennsylvania 67 counties that produce natural gas. Most of the counties in the southeastern part of the state do not. And so it's mostly in the Appalachian region and westward. In 2005, there were 3,985 conventional wells drilled in Pennsylvania, and yet 9 unconventional wells drilled. So you're a little shy of 4,000 wells being drilled. Now, when you go through the 17-year sample, there starts to be a decline in conventional wells being drilled in 2008 as the unconventional wells start picking up. In 2019, you know, new conventional wells fell to just 172. So that's a heck of a drop. You're talking 96.4% decrease in the number of conventional wells. You have a couple thousand wells. 1,900 was the top amount for unconventional wells. You know, and that was in 2015, 2016. And so even now, that number is still 576. So you see this trend of conventional wells being phased out, and unconventional wells kind of rose a little bit before it fell some. And a lot of it has to do with the price of natural gas. Natural gas is a traded commodity on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And prior to the boom in unconventional wells, the average price in 2005 was $8.69 per million British thermal units. In 2009, when fracking really started to pick up, it fell by more than half, down to $3.94. And since then, it's been in the $3 to $4 range. In 2020, it bottomed out at $2.03 before coming up a little bit to $3.89. So obviously, you know, price does two things. You know, as economists, we say it does two things. things. It encourages production or discourages production, depending on how it goes. And as the price fell, I'm sure a lot of producers decided not to drill so much. So now let's talk about the total number of wells within the Commonwealth. In 2005, we had 35,428 actively producing wells. And I need to say that because while we looked at the number of wells being drilled, not every well successful, not every well hangs in there. So you can go in the state's Department of Environmental Protection website and look at all the production reports. And we just looked at producing gas wells. We didn't look at coal bed seam wells. We didn't look at combined oil and gas wells or any other type of wells that are drilled that happen to produce natural gas. We looked at just wells drilled for the purpose of extracting natural gas. While the number of conventional wells fell a bit down to 45,225 and then dropped down to 38,000 plus in 2020, the number of unconventional wells kept rising. In 2021, we had 10,366 unconventional wells. So you can see there's still a lot of conventional wells in production, but they're not as productive as the unconventional wells.
So that's really interesting. So in terms of the wells then that are producing, when you're looking at how much is extracted in terms of natural gas in Pennsylvania, what are your statistics and your data over that time period show?
Oh, absolutely. In 2005, in the beginning of this study, there were 141.3 million MCF. MCF stands for 1,000 cubic feet worth of natural gas pulled from the Commonwealth. Of that total, 88,907 MCF came from unconventional wells. That's just 0.06% of total, hardly anything. Again, you had this decline in production from conventional wells. They rose a little bit to 164.56 million, and in 2019, they fell down below 100 million MCFs and down to 38.82 million MCFs in 2020. Now, it did bounce back a little bit in 2021 to 66.61. You're at a fraction of what you were producing, 17 years ago. So let's look at the unconventional wells. Unconventional wells, again, in 2005, just 88,970 MCFs. In 2011, it topped the 1 billion mark. 1.063 billion MCFs in 2011, hit 5 billion MCFs in 2016 before hitting 7.5 billion MCFs in 2021. So while there's a lot fewer unconventional gas wells, they're producing a lot more gas than the conventional wells. Like I said, they were just a fraction of the total. Now they're 99.12% of our total output of natural gas in the Commonwealth coming from unconventional natural gas wells using the hydraulic fracturing method.
Frank, great stuff as always, and we always encourage our listeners to visit our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org. You can read this brief. You can read our archives as well. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Inflation is surging and putting a financial pinch on every American household. So says Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
President Biden just visited Philadelphia to address the union convention of the AFL-CIO. The Politico piece covering the event was entitled, Biden Strains for a Message on Deteriorating Economy, which aptly describes the challenge the president and congressional leaders are having while trying to navigate discussions on the economy. In his speech, President Biden dismissed the impact of massive new government spending on today's historic inflation, saying, I don't want to hear any more of these lies about reckless spending or changing people's lives. Well, Americans for Prosperity's Vice President of Government Affairs, Akash Chugli, noted the following in response to President Biden's remarks. President Biden is right about one thing. People's lives are being changed. They're paying $5 per gallon for gasoline. They're paying nearly $500 more every month for groceries and other essentials. They're scouring empty shelves and relying on family and friends for baby formula. They're more concerned than they ever have been about the future of the country. Trust in government is near all-time lows, and they're tired of politicians telling them being worse off is for the better. Well, the truth is, the president should be thanking every legislator that held the line against the additional $4.7 trillion they were working so hard to ram through in the fall. Imagine where we'd be if Senators Manchin and Sinema had buckled under the intense pressure to rubber stamp another so-called, quote, rescue package. Leaders of this administration ignored every warning they received about the dangers of inflation, and now they're blaming everyone but themselves for the results. It's clear to anyone outside of Washington that massive government spending contributed significantly to inflation, and it was happening long before Russia invaded Ukraine. We're not going to be able to change course until we're honest about how we got here. Well, earlier this year, in a paper asking, why is U.S. inflation higher than other countries, the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco estimated that the American Rescue Plan contributed to U.S. inflation by about 3 percentage points. For American families, this means inflation is costing the average household an extra $460 per month, essentially an additional tax of more than $5,500 this year. As the nation's largest grassroots organization, we prioritized a national legislative campaign throughout 2021 that focused on the need to end Washington waste and demanded that Congress stop the spending spree. In Pennsylvania, we held large events in congressional districts from Pittsburgh to Happy Valley to Allentown. This campaign netted 800 events with over 2.6 million contacts into Congress. Last month, we launched our latest national campaign, The True Cost of Washington. Across the nation, we're hosting events at gas stations, temporarily lowering the price for an hour to January 2021 prices. That was $2.38 a gallon when President Biden assumed office. We're talking with folks of all the policies contributing to skyrocketing prices as they're pumping gas and asking them to share the impact of the squeeze on their family. Please visit www.truecostofwashington.com to learn more about the campaign and our solutions. Americans for Prosperity will continue to connect the policies of the Biden administration to the realities of communities across the Commonwealth. My name is Ashley Klingensmith. I'm State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. Find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 27 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WCNS-AM in Latrobe, WWSM-AM in Lebanon, along with WJSM-FM in Martinsburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
We'll be right back.